Welcome to Going Rogue, the podcast for clear-eyed rebels and utopia preppers. I'm here as always with the rogue journalist, Caitlin Johnston. I'm Caitlin's worst half, Tim Foley. Caitlin.
G'day, Tim.
What's new?
Well, I'm about to go on the Unity for Assange vigil with Susie Dawson.
Oh, man, that's so great.
Yeah, so I've been watching it. Well, we've been watching it all morning, haven't we?
Yeah.
It reminds me so much of, like, you know, a good old-fashioned telethon. Like, I want to be, like, in my doona and, you know, eating cereal and stuff and, like, willing the numbers to go up.
And, Susie and Elizabeth Livos, they got really good at that already, huh?
Yeah, they are.
Just their second one of these, but they've really stepped up.
Yeah, they've got such a professional air to them.
It's very streamlined.
It is. I'm amazed at how professional they come off as. So it's really, really cool. They're such cool. I really love those ladies. Like, they're so unique. Like, you know, their pathways have been unique and stuff, but what they do is, they've got such integrity. Like, I really do feel like I can totally trust the both of them.
Yeah, it's weird. It seems like you got to be really careful in your business who you associate with.
Yeah.
And it has burned you in the past.
It has.
But those two are just consistent, really solid, good-hearted people, and you can really rely on that, it seems. It's awesome.
Right, yeah. So I'm excited about that. I'll be talking to Susie 7 p.m. PST tomorrow. Mm. Well, that's tomorrow for us, I guess. Anyway, 7 p.m. PST on Sunday night.
And that's just for anyone who's in the Melbourne time zone. What's that going
to
be for us?
I think that's, I have to look it up again, but I think it's 1 or 2
okay, cool.
p.m. Monday.
Just so I know when not to be making spaghetti.
You always get real hungry just before I go. Because it's in our kitchen, isn't it? I always take everything down and, sit in the kitchen against that big yellow painting.
And I got to start making kitchen noises.
Yeah. Oh, well. Cool. So,
all right. So, yeah, tune into that, everybody, if you're listening to this before that.
Yeah, who knows? But otherwise, so a couple of stories. And so...
All right, what are we talking about first?
Well, let's do a little bit of Russian hysteria.
Russia. 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 Hysteria. Russia. Oh, Russia. No, Russia. Russia. Hysteria.
That's great.
Thank you. I love this garage band thing. Amuses the hell out of me. Anyway.
So we're talking about Russia hysteria.
Russian hysteria, yeah. But this one's about Babchenko, Arkadiy Babchenko.
You haven't written about him yet.
No, right. Moon of Alabama's been doing a great job of that. But someone who's done a really fantastic job is an anonymous writer whose name is something like Black Cat or Cat Black or Chat Noir or whatever, who writes for Off Guardian.
Yeah, they're an editor.
Yeah. Mm. So, she wrote this amazing story that is very much worth just reading. The title is, What If Babchenko Had Decided to Stay Dead?
So who is Babchenko? Give us some background.
Okay, right. He is a Russian journalist, quite the dissident, moved to Ukraine because he really, 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 really doesn't like Putin and was writing a lot about him and against him.
And Ukraine was happy to have him, I'm sure.
Oh, yes, because Ukraine is, you know, a great enemy of Russia. They've the fight over Crimea, etc., and the government there really, really doesn't like Russia.
Basically since 2014.
Yeah, where there was a coup, a US-backed coup, partly with neo-Nazis took over.
We just love just... flooding a country just with heavily armed extremists.
Yeah, isn't it weird? Like, there's no such thing as a moderate rebel when it comes to, like, you know, the US loves calling them moderates, but it's always the real assholes that they love to give money and arms to.
Well, I mean, the whole idea is, like, where's a large group of people that we could pay to kill people?
Right.
They're not going to be nice people.
That's true. You don't get into the killing business for fun, do you?
I'm just glad China hasn't done that to America yet. I mean, they could start at any time funneling money to the Ku Klux Klan or whatever groups we had, the mafia.
Right, right. Well, I mean, this is the kind of projection. Like, this is what the US sometimes tries to accuse Russia of, you know, causing dissent by funding. But they always go for these, like, by funding Black Lives Matter, by putting, you know, by giving them signal boosting, not funding, but signal boosting.
Oh, Black Lives Matter.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Civil rights. Ah, no. The dissent. Yeah. So, the US can't even really project what they do onto other countries without making, like, because.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's like, there was that whole fuss where they were like, they're funding Black Lives Matter. You funded ISIS, cunts. Yeah. Jesus.
Yeah. Yes. Glass houses, mate. Glass houses. Right. Anyway, back to Babchenko. Like, so he's a Russian journalist, and he was assassinated. Killed. Dead.
Oh, no.
Right. And so immediately everyone was like, oh, my God, the Russians. Now, the news waves were flooded with the, like, raised fists. The Russians did this, and look, they've killed a dissident journalist. I'm sick of this. You guys, you know, keep trying to pretend that they're angels, but look, this is what Putin does, etc. New York Times, Luke Harding had a field day. You could see, you know, he's putting together his next book. This is going to be fantastic.
Everyone was like, oh, yeah, all those lefties and Trump supporters are just going to be like, whoa, no, all the evidence isn't in yet.
Yeah, that's right. There was a beautiful tweet by Centrist Dad, I think, was one in his handle anyway. And he was like, oh, yeah, well, so Jeremy Corbyn's going to be hanging back going, where's the evidence on this? that aged very well. So yeah. It's just
so it was the number one story. This guy is dead.
He's been assassinated. He's dead. He's been obviously he's a dissident Russian journalist living in Ukraine. He must have been killed by the Russians.
There's no other possibility. This is a fact. You don't get to question it.
You do not get to say anything about this, all right? You know, and even asking for evidence at an early stage was mocked. Thoroughly mocked. Like, pa, 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 evidence? You think these people are angels? Etc.
So we know so many things about Russia, and this is just what they do. This is a fact.
Yeah. So, problem was, he's alive.
Oh.
Yes. He turned up to his own press conference.
Awkward.
Looking a little sheepish, but very much alive. his story is that the Ukraine security branch or whatever asked him to get involved in a conspiracy kind of thing where he would fake his own death and he would become a crisis actor in his own death. So they took a photo of him and it's like got blood on it. It looks fairly fake, but, you know, like we wouldn't have been allowed to say that at the time, like, you know, because what? Oh, do you think they would lie about this? So, yeah, he was a crisis actor in his own death. He faked it. They took photos. There was because there were early reports that they had messed around with the security tapes of his apartment, etc. So there was that's when people started go, hang on, what's going on? Like, that can't be right. This was internally. Anyway, so Babchenko's story was, yes, I faked my death. Sorry to my wife. I thought that was harsh. For a month he knew that he was going to fake this death, but he didn't even tell his wife, so.
Would you be okay with me doing that?
No, I would not be okay with you doing that, no.
What if it's to fuck over Russia? Like, a really good cause.
I would not be happy with that at all.
This is a really good
you would
cause.
Get the rounds of the kitchen. Oh my goodness. No, yeah. So yeah, he's in a lot of trouble there. So and now there's two other players, main players in this. There was the supposed killer, the one who was going to kill him, and the guy who arranged it. So the supposed killer, the one who, you know,
so this is the theory is that, if I can interrupt you for a second, the theory is that what Ukraine is saying is that they had to fake this guy's death because the Kremlin was going to kill him.
Right.
And they needed to fake his death to prevent his death because they knew someone was going to assassinate him, but something, 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 we have to fake his death.
We have to fake his death because we want to find out who it is, even though they knew that he was going to get killed. So they knew enough to know that he was going to be assassinated, but not enough to know who was going to do it.
Okay, but they arrested someone.
They did arrest someone, yes. His name's German, actually, Hermann. Now, he's an interesting character, right? So he was the one who was supposedly meant to have communed with the Russian authorities and been the one to organize the killer. So,
because the Kremlin doesn't know any killers.
Yeah. So not any good ones, anyway.
Like, homie, you got the hookup? Yeah. Where are those assassins at?
Yeah. Now, German, the one that they've got under arrest here, he is saying that he was working with the Ukrainian authorities to stage this death as well. He said that he was faking it. And so he's amazed now that he's, you know, being he's in court for it. So he says that he was working with the Ukrainian authorities. The killer that he hired or whatever, that he sought out, says that he was working with the Ukrainian
authorities. Well, the assassin as well.
The assassin as well was saying, yeah, I was pretending for them. I was involved in this conspiracy to fake the death.
So the assassin, the guy who hired the assassin, and the guy who was assassinated.
All.
Were all fake.
We're all fake and all working with the Ukrainian authorities, if you believe what they say. Yes.
But we're meant to believe that this was to prevent an assassination attempt by the Kremlin, even though there are no real people involved, going by what we have available to us information-wise right now.
No, right, yeah. And what we do know about German is that they have had there's a whole business side story to this, you know, because he does work with the Ukrainian government on, like, in a military, he produces military stuff for them. And
so there was, like, yeah, that was the Moon of Alabama article, which is, I found very confusing, to be honest. But like,
I had to read it very, very slowly. there's all these players and they've got these massive long names and stuff. It's really, it's quite difficult.
Moon of Alabama is smart.
He's a smart dude, yeah, isn't he?
I can understand why more people don't read him, because he doesn't write in dumb language.
Yeah, but he really gives you everything. He pointed that out, that there was this side narrative where the Ukrainian, that there was beef about this guy, and that they had been efforts to take out him from his company.
Take out German.
Take out German from, you know, take him away from his company so that they could take it over through other legal means as well. So this may have, like, you know, what it looks like is that the Ukrainian government had, like, a couple of different reasons. This was going to solve a few problems. Well, but mainly it was going to solve their issue with him, with this German guy. But
so it was mainly just this scheme, this corporate scheme.
Yeah, it really had nothing to do with anything, but they knew, and they must have known this, that that everyone would go, oh yeah, Russians, sure, of course.
We'll just pin it on Russia.
Yeah, easy. It's just, that's what you do. It's like, you know, it's like living in the South, you know, and like a white guy commits a crime and he just, like, during the Jim Crow era, you just blame a black guy and then move on with your life, because
in the American Revolution, that everyone dressed up like Indians to American Indians to throw the tea in the harbor. Right. And they're like, yeah, it seems like something those Redskins would do.
Right, exactly. So yeah, it's just an easy person to blame.
It's just Wild West now. You can just you have this group of nefarious orc-like creatures that you can just go, yeah, well, they just do evil stuff all the time, and this evil stuff is definitely involved them.
But yeah, and the Moon of Alabama guy describes Ukraine right now as the Wild East in that way, in that there is just these, you know, these, like, They use the legal system. It's extremely corrupt. They just use what like power has really just taken over there in a very pernicious way. And it's just all about like who you know and who you can pay and what palms you can grease as to, you know, whether justice in inverted commas is served.
Which explains why the U.S. centralized oligarchy is able to get along with them so easily.
Right, because they're extremely good at that.
A whole bunch of levers to pull.
Yeah, that's right.
So the article is titled, "The Real Question We Should All Be Asking Ourselves About Russian Hysteria." What is that question?
The question is that the question that the Off-Guardian editor asked in her article, what if Babchenko had decided to stay dead? Now, what if he had decided... And she posits to wear a bad wig and, you know, a couple of hundred grand and move to Hawaii or whatever and just stay dead. What would happen then? Wow. Well, the Western Empire would never, ever, ever question his death at all.
It would just be known.
Yeah.
It was already, I mean, it was already, that's canon, that happened.
It goes into Wikipedia. That's straight right. to Wikipedia.
Right.
And that's how we, and then everyone from now on uses his death as something that they can point to and say, you think that, you know, blah, 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 the Russians, they're totalitarian, they kill journalists. What about Babchenko? What about, you know, so they go on and on and on, and they develop this narrative that, you know, that the Russians are somehow different in any way to the Western Empire. Meanwhile, you know, we got Julian Assange dying in an embassy somewhere, but that's got nothing to do with anything.
He can leave whenever he wants, Caitlin.
He can leave whenever he wants. He can leave whenever he wants.
He can leave whenever he wants.
Yeah. So, yeah. It is a really interesting question to pose. What happens when someone decides, you know, if he had just decided to stay dead, there are no stopgaps in place in the Western media to question anything that goes against an establishment narrative.
Right, yeah. It was just the Ukrainian government just said this happened and instantly it was fact. Instantly.
Right.
No resistance whatsoever. We didn't even really question it. We were like, yeah, that sounds fishy. Wait a couple of days and see what happens.
Yeah, but you know.
It never occurred to us to question if he was even dead.
Yes, yeah. Like, you know, who killed him? Was on my mind, but like whether he was dead or not.
Even we, as critical and skeptical as we are,
yeah.
never even took it that far.
No.
We were insufficiently skeptical of the propaganda machine.
Exactly. And what they will do and what lengths that they will
and
go to.
And how easy it is to lie to us.
Right. With one faked photo and, you know, and a government willing to say stuff.
Okay, but I mean, surely this was an isolated incident, right? They would never actually lie to us and keep lying to us about Russia, would they?
Wow. That's all they seem to do. We've caught them out so many times. The Skripal case was just one, just farcical, you know, and Boris Johnson was onto this Babchenko thing straight away.
Instantly.
Yeah. So Boris Johnson, he was the one who said about the Skripal case, you know, with the Russian spy who was killed by a deadly nerve agent that wasn't so deadly. In fact, it failed to kill the two people that it was. They're both fine now. So he was the one who said that it was unequivocally, absolutely a Russian chemical. The Novichok had come from Russia, and it turned out he totally lied about that. And in fact, the his lie was to say that the lab had said that, and then the lab had to come out and say, no, we didn't actually say that. So Boris Johnson is an incredibly disreputable character, but he's still, nothing happened. He's still the leader of the Foreign Office there.
He's so lied.
Yeah. And everyone covered it up, and they even, like, they deleted tweets. They, like, you know, they amended transcripts and stuff like that. There was just and then they just kind of tried to cover it up. So he was out there saying, Babchenko, oh, this is terrible. The Russian government, you know, they need to be held to account, etc. In a tweet, And the guy's been alive, proven alive for days now, and that tweet is still up.
With no correction, no comment, nothing.
No, he doesn't, so... I mean, maybe all he can think to do is lie about it. I don't know. He's like, well, how do I, you know, lie without deleting the tweet? I'm not sure where to go from here. I just lie. That's all I do.
I know. That's my only tool in the toolbox.
Yeah.
This is the same guy that was championing the white helmets and talking about how great they are.
Right.
This guy is pure scum. Like, we don't talk about UK politics as much as we talk about US politics. But he seems like... That Foreign Office position seems like it's like just as designed for sociopaths as the
State Department.
Yeah,
yeah.
He's got the Hillary Clinton
the spot.
Seat.
Yeah,
yeah.
That's where you put the real assholes. Yeah. Mm. So yeah. So yeah. So no, absolutely. those two stories have just proven the Western media machine to be absolutely.
Completely uncritical.
Yeah, and incapable of questioning narratives that come from... I mean, even... what was her name? Heather from The Guardian was...
Oh, right, yeah.
Yeah, she just said, well, I just repeated... That was in the case of the Russian bots with EN56 and Partisan Girl.
Yeah, where they said that these just normal human being... citizens were Russian bots.
Where she said, but I just, like, the government said that, so...
Yeah, I said what the government told me to say.
Yeah. In The Guardian.
Not just a journalist, but, like, a high-level editor.
The editor in The Guardian said that. Like, that's what you do. Sorry, but the government said that, so am I meant to question it as a journalist? I think not. I just say what they say. What? Oh, you're looking at me funny? What is this? So, yeah.
And, yeah, so that never happens, which, is unfortunate because they have every motive to lie, right?
Absolutely. Because their paychecks come from the very same plutocratic establishment that that benefits from all of this. Like, these are the same people, you know, the people at the top of all of this are the exact same people whose empire is crumbling before their very
eyes. Right,
that's
what I mean. They're the ones who have every motive to lie, right?
Right, yeah, because we're entering into a multipolar world where the corporatocracy of the Western Empire is starting to lose control, and especially the Western war machine. Syria is a great example of that. They're just not able to get the wars that they need to sustain their business model. so they have every... they really do need to make a demon out of Russia and to keep that going endlessly.
Why do they need to make a demon out of Russia?
Well, Russia is not a part of that, not a part of the blob. Russia and China, Russia acts as a kind of like the military arm of China, I guess. You know, China doesn't need to do much. It's just enormous. And it's so powerfully... you know, as a trade partner, it is so powerful. You can't really say anything about it, but you can have a go at Russia, who's a kind of...
China's like the rich guy. Russia's like the rich guy's bodyguard.
Yeah, right, yeah. And, you know, Russia's got a GDP of, like, Spain, I think, or something. Mm. It's not a huge country, but it does have nukes. And so, yeah, it's kind of the kicking boy of that. There's this... You know, when you're taking over, like when you're really sociopathic and you're taking over, you will go after the small people first, the most helpless, the most vulnerable, and, you know, cut them off first. And what we're seeing is just they're running out of small and vulnerable nations to absorb into the blob.
Or small and vulnerable nations that have stuff to offer, things worth stealing.
Resources that they need to steal. Yeah, but Russia, you know, just keeps helping people that they want to absorb, like Syria.
Yeah, they act like Crimea is the main thing that they're mad at Russia about. I think Crimea is, like, strategically valuable, but I think Syria is the real thing. That's what they really want to punish them for.
Oh, yeah.
How dare you? That was ours.
Right,
we were going to take that. We were on the cusp of just having al-Nusra marching into Damascus... probably under NATO air cover.
Right.
And you guys stepped in and started killing all our terrorists we hired.
Yeah.
How dare you?
How dare you? We nearly had the pretty lady.
And that was in the end of 2015. By the end of 2016, we were in full-fledged Russia hysteria.
Right. So, yeah, no, I do think you're right. Like, I think that that's a real, they're real, like, them Russians, you know, they're spoiling our rapey plans.
Mm.
But, yeah, anyway, so that was that story. I guess that's, is that pretty
much
it?
Yeah, I think that's about it.
Yeah. So what about, we'll have some WikiLeaks.
Yeah.
Also interesting is, remember, it's illegal to possess these stolen documents. It's different for the media. So everything you learn about this, you're learning from us.
Nice.
Thanks. Doesn't that make you feel more naughty?
Yeah.
According to Chris Cuomo, especially, like, we're doing something very illegal here. yeah, so WikiLeaks. Lenin Moreno, the Ecuadorian president, said Assange can remain at the embassy so long as he doesn't practice journalism.
What?
Yeah. So the asylum was granted to Assange on the fact that he was a journalist and he was being persecuted for it. But now that they're telling us, Lenin Moreno, who's like recently been elected as a president, and we weren't really sure how that was going to go. Rafael Correa, you know, was a champion of Assange, and he was very much anti the Western establishment. You know, he even kicked out their military base.
Right.
So
right, there was two guys running against each other, and one of them ran on a campaign promising to kick Assange out.
Yeah.
That wasn't Lenin Moreno. Lenin Moreno said that he would protect Assange.
Right, yeah.
And we were really hoping that he would win. But he seems to be doing the same thing anyway.
Oh, he's doing this kind of slidey kind of, you know.
Well, what's he saying? What does Moreno say?
Well, he's saying, yeah, you can stay at the embassy, but you're not allowed to comment on political, you're not allowed to tweet out or comment on political situations. You're not allowed to make political commentary.
You're not allowed to be Julian Assange.
You're not allowed to be Julian Assange.
That's the thing that Julian Assange is.
Yeah. And the reason why that they granted him asylum in the first place.
Right. Yeah. You're saying you can continue to be, have our hospitality and have political asylum so long as you don't be the thing that you are and do the thing that we granted you asylum for.
Right, yeah.
Which is just the same as saying, here, Western Empire, I'll shut him up.
Right, yeah. Right, yeah. I mean, admittedly, he's under a lot of political pressure. There's been envoys to Quito to talk to him about reinstating the US military base, which they have agreed to do. And this has all happened at around the same time.
Mm.
So, yeah, there's, I mean, you know, 6 weeks from Sunday, they know how to make life painful. And Venezuela is just, you know, two countries over. It's a stark reminder of what they can do to you. Like, they really can put the squeeze on you if they want to.
Right.
So, yeah, they're very aware of that. So I'm not saying that this is, you know, Moreno's problem. The real nasty assholes here are the Western Empire, who will absolutely, unequivocally arrest him and take him away to some CIA black site, rendition the hell out of him, and leave him broken and in prison for a very long time. Under what? You know, we don't know what laws he's broken. They won't say it. They don't need to. They're so powerful, these people. They can just blabber all the time and, you know, like, you know, he's a rapist, I guess.
It really, all you need is a narrative. You just get your narrative going. There doesn't need to be any facts behind it.
Right.
But, yeah, Sessions said that we're prioritizing his arrest. Adam Schiff, just a little while ago, said I'll talk to him after we've arrested him.
Right. Yeah.
So, I mean, Schiff's a lawyer.
Yes.
Jeff Sessions is the attorney general. These guys know the law.
Yeah. And they're on the inside of the secret, like, you know, of the, the secret documents that would be going around about him and what they're doing and what their objectives are and their gender is. And they've made it clear by their actions, their agenda on the table is to grab him and silence him for good.
Hmm.
But the problem is now what we find ourselves in is that he's in this horrendous situation where he can either stay in the embassy without any interaction with the world as he is currently and, you know, he is silenced, or he can agree to Moreno's conditions and not talk about anything politically, so therefore he is silenced, or he can take the jump, step outside the embassy and be whisked away by the US government and extradited, and he will be silenced. So
shut up, or shut up are his choices.
They are his choices. They must be extremely happy right now at in Capitol Hill that they've managed to kind of chess play him into this position.
It's
pretty desperate.
It's probably freed up a lot of the intelligence community's resources to not have to worry about all the things that Assange would have been saying about, you know, Trump's Syria strikes and his Iran warmongering and all that. Because he's missed a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
He's missed a lot of action in the 2 months he's been out of commission, 2 months plus.
Right.
That he's been out of commission. They've really ramped up their disgusting operations.
They actually, and I don't think that's coincidental.
Mm.
It did seem like from day one he was under, you know, he was basically taken out of the game, and they just started really ramping it up. So we're, we could so do with some Assange wisdom right now. But we have to do what we can do.
Right, yeah, they really want him shut up. So this is coming from the Ecuadorian president. You've been to Ecuador.
Yeah, I went to Ecuador in 1999 for three or so months. I had this kind of, you know, poetical love affair with the idea of going to South America and traveling all around it. So I saved up as much money as I could and took a backpack. And the first place I went to was Ecuador, and I could not leave. I just loved it. I loved the art, the culture, the people, just their big-heartedness. The fact it's quite a tiny little country, but you know, there's the coastline, there's the Andes running right the way through it, and then there's the Amazon, you know, just there. So you can, although the roads are a little dodgy and stuff, you take your life in your own hands, you know, just navigating around there. It is the most beautiful place, and the indigenous people there are just fascinating. Like, and the way that they have lived. With the land there was really, really intriguing to me. So I couldn't leave. So I didn't get to see a lot. I basically got to see Peru, some of Bolivia, and then like had to get a bus through Chile to get out of there on time. It's just a huge place, and there's some really amazing things that you can see. But yeah, I really did fall in love with it, and I've often thought to myself that I would love to go there again, you know, and just to be amongst the people there. There's something that really changed me there. So it wasn't surprising to me when they were the ones who stepped up and said, well, fuck it. Like, you know.
It was surprising to me. I'd never thought about Ecuador. I was like, the Ecuador embassy? Who the fuck is that?
Right, yeah, because they're tiny. They're,
I had to go and look at a globe. I didn't know. Where is that now?
Yeah.
Is that on the east or the west or what?
Right, yeah. But they have a history of, like, a very interesting political history. When I got there, so I think I got there in April of 99, just previous to that, the banks had fallen. Then the Sucre, which was the currency at the time, was, you know, you had like to basically, it wasn't wheelbarrows of cash to buy bread, but it was the inflation was through the roof. And the government was doing that whole fucking dance that they did in the US, you know, like a little less than a decade later, where they preferenced the bank's health over the savings of these people. So they were frantic, you know, they didn't know how they were going to get through the week, like, with, you know, the money that they had. And so there was, you know, there was a lot of riots and stuff and rubber bullets and tear gas, etc. But in amongst it, they never had a riot without a brass band or some empanadas and, like, you know, the, some awesome chicha. Like, it was always a party as well. And that was just the whole experience there. Like, you know, you would be woken up in the middle of the night by a brass band. I don't know where they came from. I don't know why they, like, you know, they always had a tuba going. There was always a tuba to be had. Like, so, yeah, it was just a really fun place. I really liked it. Anyway.
So that's probably the environment that gave birth to the eventual decision to give asylum to Assange.
Yeah, they don't take shit from no one, really. Mm. They have a very strong lefty side to them, and they saw the scourge of neoliberalism because at that stage, and that they, you know, they've been Rafael Correa, you know, went in on a very lefty platform of anyway, they definitely, I didn't, it made total sense to me that they would say, oh, fuck that, no, like, let's take him in and protect this voice, you know, transparency against the Western Empire.
It's a shame that Moreno is maybe turning his back on that. Even more of a shame is that your country has completely turned its back on it the whole time and didn't bring him home when they should have.
I know.
Many years ago.
And how oppressive is the silence right now? Right. I scan the newspapers, you know, and on the TV and whatever, just to...
Nobody fucking... Except today.
Except today.
The Sydney Greg Morning Barnes. Herald.
Yeah, yeah. So that was great.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Thank you. He wrote a whole... This is Assange's legal advisor. He's an Australian guy, and to his credit, the Sydney Morning Herald ran his story about why Australia should step up and assert its sovereignty and bring him home, right? Or talk to them? Or what did he say?
Yeah, he made a very interesting point. Now, the Australian government in general and the Australian mass media have been very obtuse about why we're not doing anything. They've made as little utterances as possible about what the fuck, why are we so silent about this? Why don't we care about this? Kelly Tranter, a lawyer for Wikipedia and an activist, she went and got some FOIA documents about why, the reason Australia was standing back. So that was a while ago. And the reason was that in these documents, the Australian government believes that it was best to, that they would be standing on Sweden's sovereignty if they were to intervene. So Sweden had this case with rape allegations, and there was an ongoing arrest for warrant for his arrest, but that was dropped. So there is no reason, according to the Australian government's own assessment, for the Australian government not to step in at this point, because the Swedish case is out of the way. There's only this ongoing, you know, bail jumping thing, which is nothing. There's really no reason why the Australian government can't just step in and go, okay, he's our guy, let us deal with it and bring him home.
That is what a sovereign nation would do.
Yes. Yeah, it's strange how we never act like a sovereign nation when we need to.
You act like the kid in a family of abuse while the dad's slapping around the wife and you're just there in the corner looking at the floor.
Right. Well, I actually even more perceive us as kind of like the sidekick of the bully, like that, yeah, yeah, right, yeah, guy. Like
the,
who's...
The just, toady.
Yeah,
the
yeah.
The Grover Dill.
Yes. Yeah, just no will of our own, just, yeah, yeah, one of us, yeah, go America, right? And just shit scared of the States, just shit scared of them, just don't want to, we do not go against them in any way, shape, or form. We don't even like to talk badly about them, like.
Don't even like to talk about anything that might offend them.
Yeah.
Apparently.
Yeah, it's all
It's so weird. Yeah, what country would just be fine with its citizen being imprisoned
for journalism.
Right. Well, no other country.
But, America, you know, like, America would shake the earth if that was done.
Yeah. We even stood with the US on the Israel Palestinian thing. Just that was only a couple of weeks ago. We're the only other country to do so. So right. That's
right.
That we really are just the best friend of the bully, I think. And we don't know how else to do anything but that. But I think that's because there's a long history of, you know, there was the coup in this country that the US participated in this 1975, but also this long history of trade agreements and military agreements and intelligence agreements, the Five Eyes, ANZUS, you know, there's all these agreements that have reduced us into, like, we just can't move anymore. And we've got Pine Gap, the military station.
Yeah, also, like, in the sense of how politics is downstream from culture, I think culture-wise, Australia doesn't really have a clear idea of itself or what it is either.
Ah, that's so true.
Like, yeah. We went to see a play, which was...
It's a local theater.
It was a local theater, and it was set in Germany. It was about the whole thing was set in Germany.
In the late 19th century.
Right. And this is, you know, an Australian theater company that, and it's about Germany. They did it with American accents.
The whole thing. Not just this, because we sing with American accents.
Right.
But they, yeah. And
all the actors had American accents.
You picked that up and I didn't.
It's normal to you.
Yes.
They just theaters do that here.
Yeah.
Even like I could understand like a lot of the plays we go to see, you know, Broadway is in America. So a lot of the plays that you go to see did come from America. That's a big theater factory there. But if it didn't, and if it's not set in America, there's no reason for Australian actors to be putting on American accents. It's ridiculous.
Right.
But they put on American accents to play Germans speaking English.
This weird. Is how little idea we have of ourselves, you right. know? Yeah. We just see ourselves through the prism of American culture.
And English.
I mean, like, American culture pretty much defined us. Like, we didn't really know who we were until Crocodile Dundee came out, which was a big Hollywood production by a guy who, you know, had lived in the States for ages. And they told us who we were. And then Steve Irwin, you know, as well, like, yeah, he's great. Like, I love him. But he's very much an American idea of what an Australian is.
Yeah. And also in relation to the English, you guys have a lot of stuff with a lot of baggage with the English. So you consider yourselves lower than them all the time. Like
They make sure we think of ourselves like that. I have English people in my family. They always make sure of that. Like,
so that's just this ongoing thing that you have, like a sibling rivalry or something, or a rival with a parent or something like that.
Yeah, it's more parental rivalry.
Where you're constantly comparing yourselves to them and being like, oh yeah, well they're the snooty ones, and we're like the normal, down to earth kind of hokey ones.
Right. Yeah, but that's all we got. Just, you know, in relation to
you right. know. You know what you're not. You don't really know what you are.
Yeah, yeah. So, that's absolutely true. We really don't have culture.
Which has lent itself to being shaped by the establishment propaganda machine in a way that other countries maybe wouldn't be.
Right.
Like Ecuador.
Yeah, well, Ecuador, like, you know.
They have a very clear idea of what they are.
In Ecuador. I used to watch a lot of Ecuadorian TV. It's hilarious. And oh, my God. Yeah, they have a whole other thing. They really do. And, like, of course they do, because, they, you know, they're not just a culture based on the Spanish colonialism, but also, like, they have deep roots in their Quechuan culture as well. So, yeah, they really know who they are. But we only got here 200 years ago, like, as freaking convicts. Like, so, and as, you know, and then there was a flood from the potato famine. Like, no one wanted to come here.
Right, yeah. No, then, you just got thrown over here. And you got thrown here, and they were like, I hate it here. Oh, those brown people, let's kill them. And then now you're here, you are. Yeah. That's it. That's, like, the whole story. What do we do now?
Not very long to establish a culture, you know? And we have, we're not allowed to, the indigenous culture, to their credit, the various Aboriginal tribes have held it very close to their chest because they realized what we are and what we will do and how we appropriate and how we use it against people. So
you can't destroy something if you don't know what it is.
Yeah. Exactly. I think they worked that out at a very key point.
So they keep a lot of their culture secret.
Yeah. Which is great, but it means we can't take any kind of pride
or wisdom or insight or anything grounding as to who you are as a culture,
yeah,
what you're doing here, what this strange place is,
yeah,
with these strange animals.
Well, what this country is, you know. Mm. When you go to Uluru, like right in the center there, and there's that big red rock, you get this sense of what this country is. But
It's kind of like...
In terms of a narrative around that, like, we haven't built one.
It's kind of like there's this just strange, mysterious land with this just crackling with spirituality.
Yeah.
And then a bunch of white people threw some suburbs on top of it.
Yes! That's exactly what it's like, isn't it?
Yeah. It's weird. It's really weird.
It's a really weird place.
So, but basically, like, the Western Empire is just like, oh, hey, free white people. Come on, here's where you come with us.
Anyway, so we do have to change that as well. You know, some good Aussie culture. There has been efforts, and it's been, oh my God, so cringy as well. Like when I went to primary school here in the 80s, and it was all about bush dances. We decided that Australian culture was about bush dances. Like, you know, these four square dances of like, so someone decided that we were basically... Australian culture was about being cowboys, but with Australian accents. That's all I could gather from the whole bush dance thing. It was like, you know, and we like to mine gold, not oil. we really need to do a better job of that.
You need to find out who you are so that you don't lose your best ones to the empire and the gears of a machine.
And that's absolutely what's happened over and over again. A trope in Australia that if you're going to do anything here, you have to move away.
That's a damn shame.
Hmm.
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe if Australia gets a better picture of itself, this sort of thing will stop happening.
Well, and you know what would be a great way of getting a better picture of ourselves? To actually fucking do something. Yeah. Wouldn't it be fantastic to, like, you know, plant our feet and say, no, fuck off. We're taking him home.
Hmm.
I would just love that.
That would be a great unifying. Imagine having like a moment of nationalism,
yeah,
of asserting yourself as a nation state that doesn't involve like killing immigrants or
yes,
doing horrible evil things or invading anyone or anything.
Right.
Actually doing something positive. How great would that be?
Yeah.
Get a bunch of people waving their flags saying, "Nah, fuck you guys."
Yeah, we're taking aim home.
That would be wonderful.
That's my big hope.
Caitlin is an entirely reader and listener-supported journalist, so if you want to support her podcasts and articles, the best way to do that is via Patreon and PayPal. Links in the description. Follow Caitlin on Steemit or on Medium or on CaitlinJohnston.com, which will get fixed up real soon.
Yeah.
We're having a few issues. You can also buy Caitlin's book, Woke, A Field Guide for Utopia Preppers. You have been listening to Going Rogue.
Shine on, beautiful people.
Thanks, y'all.
Katie, oh Katie, who are you pissing off now? Katie, oh Katie, your words are making them howl. You're trying to spread truth, but they don't want to hear it, and we don't think that's right. Keep talking, Katie, oh Katie, who are you pissing off now? Shady, they're so shady, they're lying straight to our face. But maybe, oh maybe, the truth they'll finally embrace. But the man on the TV says you're batshit crazy, and they paint you as a fool. Keep fighting, Katie, oh Katie, who are you pissing off now? We love you, Katie, oh Katie, keep speaking truth to power. We've got your back, so don't cower. Our pretty Aussie flower.
love your girlfriend.